Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
I have real concerns.
No, you don't. What are you talking about?
I do. I'm afraid that the shutdown is going to end.
That is a legitimate concern.
I think so. I think it'll end before we can reap the true benefits of this government shutdown.
Well, now what we found out last night, Daryl did some research and he discovered that the longest shutdown only lasted like 20 days.
Do you remember when that was?
It was during the Clinton administration, okay, like 95, 96.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah.
That was when I first became aware of this thing of government shutdowns. And
right.
There have been several threats since that time, but apparently the only other time it actually shut down was in 2013.
There was a shutdown during the Reagan years. I remember that because
right.
I was in the
post-Clinton military.
Yeah. I remember the Clinton one well. I've got a good story about that we could talk about later.
Yeah, well, so maybe you out there have experienced this government shutdown. Does it mean something to you? Was something that you wanted to access unavailable today? Because they say that the non-essential government services have been shut down. But essential ones like the TSA.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, they catch so many bombs and guns at their checkpoints.
No, they don't.
No.
They don't even catch the test bombs that they send through with TSA testers.
That's right. And they don't catch like 90% of those.
We were driving on a road that was now opened by us.
Right.
They said, this road's closed. I'm like, well, I didn't see any cones. He's like, yeah. Somebody's been driving around and taking down all our barricades and stuff like that. So I'm going to have to ask for your ID. I'm like,
you can
why?
Ask, but I'm not going to show it to you.
Why? You can't even be working today. Well, no, that's not. Then that's when the camera.
Oh, he's essential. Essential government bureaucrat.
He was not essential.
No.
That was the issue. That's what I asked. So the phone comes out, the camera goes on,
oh,
we
yeah.
start asking questions and. You know, basically at that point, he was asserting that I had to provide ID, even though I was on, you know, federal land on a park that I own, which I refused to do. And that once I started quoting the acts that make it illegal for any government employee to work during a shutdown, he immediately called the supervisor and then he let me go with a warning.
I see.
Yeah. So it was just like, come on, dude.
Wow.
You're not supposed to be here. Your supervisor's not supposed to be here. We're playing by your rules.
Maybe he just knew that eventually the government was going to come back and then he was going to get back pay. So he figured he'd put in his hours anyway. There are a lot of people out there who purport similar ideas. And I like the idea that, you know, hey, buddy, you don't qualify.
Right.
It's voluntary. Or it's, you know, you don't qualify under this definition of a person or under this definition of
taxpayer yeah.
or income. You know, your money that you're earning isn't actually income. I mean, I've heard all of these things over the years. We've been doing the show for a long time.
Yeah.
And a variety of people, including some of the very advocates of these schemes, you know, have come on here, and scheme maybe is not the right word. It suggests that you're trying to get out of something that you owe, and you don't. You don't, in my opinion, owe a criminal gang anything.
Yeah,
but they will force it out of you.
They will absolutely. And this was such an abhorrent idea to our founding fathers, the people
the
who wrote
tax?
The Constitution. Yeah, there was nothing in the Constitution that allowed. The federal government to implement basically a head tax, you know, that we're going to collect tax money at the federal level from everybody. What I will say positively towards both sides is I believe there are a number of people and probably the vast majority of quote unquote grassroots that are doing things because they truly believe it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And it's that need of a wake up call to realize that big centralized organizations aren't good at promoting those sorts of changes, and they're going to be ineffective and they're going to have unintended consequences.
That's because use of aggressive force always has unintended consequences,
sure.
No matter what the end goal that you have in mind is, no matter how, you know, highfalutin, you know, your plan. Oh, we want to feed the hungry. We want to help the sick. We want to save this group of people from oppression around the world. I mean, those are all valiant goals to have.
Sure.
But the when you fund those programs through the threat of violence, which is what the government is always funding its programs through, the threat of violence, if you don't pay, they will put you in a jail cell to come back around to the income taxes. We've seen with Erwin Schiff, for instance, one of the income tax freedom advocates ended up dying in a prison cell. He was 80-something when they put him in there for, you know, saying what he said about that. So, Joe, did we answer your question all right?
Absolutely. Plus, plus, plus.
I don't get what you would want to ping on the military for, because I know a lot of people don't think a military is necessary anymore, but I have to have a difference of opinion because I know some of the things China has, and they really are a heck of a lot more sophisticated Air Force and Navy than they had, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. They've got stuff that can match ours. And they've got submarine platforms that are just as good as what we've got. Mm-hmm. They've got a larger standing army.
That's a lot more people over there.
Yep.
Yes. And
but why the fear? I mean, why are you so afraid of China? Just because they've got big weapons?
Because we've got something that we have a large enough military to dissuade them.
Why would they attack anyway? I mean, even if you didn't have, let's just say tomorrow the military disappeared, why would China attack?
Let me ask you something. Why does any country ever attack a country? Do you know what it is?
Usually land
it's
and power.
Resources.
No.
Religion.
It's not, okay.
Me too.
It's normally, well, if you'll give me a chance.
Yeah, please.
It's not people like me and you, because I was in the military, and I'm still work for the government.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. Well, listen, buddy. I mean, you really shouldn't. You shouldn't give me the aha. Okay.
That's okay.
Chris was in the military too, by the way.
Yeah. I spent many years in government service. I'm probably kind of unique in that I'm like decades older than anybody else here on our show. But I do see, as long as there is a United States, as long as we have this government system, then there's going to necessarily be some form of a defensive force. My issues with the military are that it has ceased to become a defensive force. It's become an offensive force. And the scale of spending has skyrocketed beyond any sense of reality. You know, we basically kept the Russian bear at bay for decades by matching them on a nuclear level. So here we sit with, you know what, after the SALT drawdown, somewhere around 9,000 nuclear weapons on our soil. The Chinese are estimated to have somewhere around 150 to 200. Is that not a deterrent in itself? I think the threats that we face are oftentimes more of our making. So I look at the threat of terrorism, and I look at where we have hundreds of military bases, which are on what the Muslims will consider their own holy land.
You talk about the war and everything. It's nothing but a scam. And the bad thing about it is we've made it part of our economy. So you can't talk about shutting down the military.
Oh, you got that right.
If we do that, we probably take a large section of our economy out of operation.
You're not looking at it the right way. Hold on. Let me stop you right there. Okay, yes. Mm-hmm. If you were to shut down the military, which is, you know, an amazing fantasy, but if you were to be able to do that, then sure, the military equipment manufacturers would be down some, you know, significant contracts. Like, there's no doubt their business would be hurting as a result of that. However, what would also happen is every single person who's in the military would then be able to be working in the productive economy. So instead of working for a government bureaucracy that produces nothing but heartache and dead bodies all around the globe, they would then be able to go and, I don't know, work at Walmart or work at an auto repair shop or work at a restaurant or whatever. And then that would grow the economy because they would then be contributing their labor and their intelligence and their, you know, their ability to create to the actual productive world. And that would be a good thing. Legal patent trolls. These are companies that sit on patents and they basically sue anybody who tries to do the same thing that the patent is for or something similar to what the patent is for. And they go after them and they try to get them to settle out of court through just strictly intimidation. And basically, these are companies that would not exist were it not been for patent law.
Purely parasitic.
Correct. They exist based on the fact that the government is out there to funnel money into their industry. And in a lot of cases, you find out these are lawyers who are behind these types of businesses. They created laws. Their lawyer buddies in Washington, D.C. or in the state capitals created laws that would send business, send opportunity to other lawyers who knew how to exploit that system, and that's what you have. Now, there's no doubt that, let's talk more about companies that people are more familiar with, you know, Walmart, Home Depot, mega corporations, right? Monsanto, right? These big corporations arguably would not be as powerful if it weren't for their connections to the government.
It's widely reported on other talk radio shows and on the news that all government employees will be reimbursed or back paid or what have you. And I think that's true for a lot of them under a shutdown. But in 2013, it was a shutdown, but the term that affected me was sequester. And
right.
My entire group, we were sequestered. And what that means is we worked, instead of 5 days a week, we worked 4 days a week. So that was a 20% cut in pay.
Correct.
But we continued working throughout the 16-day shutdown. Uh-huh. And so that was a 20% hit. It was pretty significant, you know.
And what bureaucracy was that? Just curious.
United States Air Force.
Air Force. Okay, so you're in the Air Force. They cut you by one day a week, and then you said you didn't get back pay once the shutdown ended?
That's correct.
And
because they weren't going to pay me for hours I didn't work.
Got you. Are you a government contractor, a civilian employer?
Civil
service.
What's that mean?
It means he's a civilian who works for the Air Force.
I see.
That's correct.
Yep.
Okay, is that a full-time job?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah, when I was in the military, I was in the Army in communications, and we had a lot of civil servants that work with us too. We just called them, you know, the civilians, but they were doing everything that we did, and oftentimes they were much more knowledgeable than we were because they had been there for 15 or 20 years at the same location.
When you join the military, there's a big contract, right? Like you've agreed to the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
Yep.
You know, you've agreed to all these extra things that the average person isn't subject to. If they just decide to stop paying you, does that negate the contract? Can you just be like,
seriously doubt I'm not a military attorney and I've never looked at it?
Can you count up the number of weeks and just say, all right, well, I got other things I could be doing. see you later.
I don't think that's an option.
No.
No, I think, then you'd just be declared AWOL and then you go to Leavenworth.
Well, presuming the people at Leavenworth are still coming to work.
Yeah, and we've never had a... And you had talked to Daryl, I guess, in last night's show, had done some research on the longest shutdowns.
Which was in the Clinton administration for like 20 days or something.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a long time, but it's not long enough.
But
we can hope, though. Don't dash my dreams here.
I want to have hope. I do want to hold on to hope. If it does go on, if this becomes a record setting, and it's not likely to do so, because they want to get this thing back on, moving ahead, but... if it does continue, if the shutdown continues into weeks and weeks and weeks, and they are not paying people in different government departments, whether it be the military or wherever, at some point, I'm sure some of them are going to start to think, you know, they're not paying me and my bills are still due. So, you know, I've got to do something here.
I want to commend you on what you said about President Woodrow Wilson. He did switch, and what you didn't point out is the reason that he switched. The reason that he switched and decided to push for going into World War I was because of British intelligence. Now, that should strike a bell. That should strike a bell for what's happening today. British intelligence. Former British intelligence agent Christopher Steele circulated this dossier, which everybody is talking about. Well, why are the British so good about these things? What happened in World War I was they intercepted a telegram. It's called the Zimmerman telegram. You can get books by that title. They intercepted a telegram in which the German Kaiser enticed the leader of Mexico to join in the war against the United States and to inherit four of our five southwestern states.
This guy that called has said that he got basically laid off during the sequester, and he didn't get his back pay, got his hours cut, and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And he's comparing that with what's going on right now. As far as I know, sequester and a government shutdown have nothing to do with each other. I mean, they're not even belong in the same conversation.
I think you're correct.
Sequester is where there was a budget cut.
Correct.
All right. Well, he seemed convinced that during the shutdown in 2013 that he was sequestered. I mean, I can't take that away from the guy.
Well, the shutdown was due to the sequestration, wasn't it?
No.
It was a budget thing.
The sequester was a budget thing. It wasn't a government shutdown. There were two totally separate things.
Was a government shutdown in 2013.
Was the sequestration before or after the shutdown? That's my question.
But I don't know. But he said
he thought it was during it. I mean, the dude was there.
He said during the sequester, this is what happened.
He said he was sequestered during the shutdown.
No, he said it was during the sequester. He didn't. Right. He never connected sequester with shutdown.
I thought he did, but okay. So how do you know? I mean, were you working for the government then too?
No, I was listening to him.
Okay.
To what he said, and then I know that those are two totally separate things. The sequester was a budget cut. The government shutdown is when Congress gets stupid, can't work things out,
right,
and they tell 17% of employees to come in.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
I must say that you guys have a completely backward way of looking at the Constitution. Article 1 of the Constitution gives Congress the power to levy and collect taxes. So I'm really confused as to where you get the nonsense statement that the federal government doesn't have the power to collect taxes.
When the hell did I say that? I mean, they have all kinds of power. They've got men with guns who will kill you if you don't do what they say.
Just earlier in the show, you were saying to some guy who was calling in
you don't know
where the power to basically have a head tax is the word that you used.
Should have been a poll tax.
Was that you, Chris, that said
that? That was me, yeah. Okay, so what exactly do you take issue with?
Well, I mean, I take issue with the whole libertarian, like, ideal of things, because I think libertarianism is like
Let's just talk constitutionalism.
No. I'd like to know, when you say libertarian ideal, you mean the idea of not using aggressive force against your peaceful neighbors? You take issue with that?
I take issue with the idea that there is a market solution for everything, because that's what most libertarians believe, right?
I disagree. I think there sometimes is market solutions, and then there are things that just don't need to exist. So, for example, I'm not convinced there is a market solution for the Department of Education.
I don't have a problem with the idea of charity, but like, social psychology has shown that people don't really care about the giving aspect of charity. People, especially rich people, they only care about the feeling that they get about giving. They only like the ability to say, oh, I gave X amount.
Who cares what the reason why they're giving is?
Mm.
So you are familiar with it's a statistic, and I'll try to pull it up, but charitable giving over the years has dropped off in the United States. Have you heard that before? Have you seen that in correlation to the number of government programs we have? So
correlation is not causation, though, Chris.
It is not. But correlation
is most definitely not causation.
No, but I'll give you an example from my small hometown. We had poor people, and I lived in a very rural area. But those kids were never denied medical attention. They got all their checkups. They got all their shots. If they had an accident or something like that, they were taken care of the hospital. And in one family that I remember, the parents were not even there. These were kids living in a house in their teens with no parents around, even when they were like 9 or 10. But they always got the doctors took care of them. The doctors didn't charge them. Nobody charged them. They just took care of them.
Since we've defined for you what libertarianism is, can you define for us what it means to be a socialist?
Or to you?
Strictly in the economic sense, it would be the workers' control of the means of production.
True.
Okay, so in that case, what you're saying is that as a socialist, you believe that the workers should own the factories and things like that. Now, do you believe that the workers should own those things through their own kind of efforts, meaning that they, you know, come together, pool money together, and purchase those factories? Or do you believe that they should take them by force from the current owners of those factories?
Well, it sort of depends. It depends on the situation, I suppose. When a factory owner is repressive and or oppressive of its workers, then a revolution might be worthwhile. But I suppose that your method or your suggestion of pooling together money to purchase the factory, I've not heard of that, but I'm sure that could be done.
Or you could do the other thing, which is to say, go out and compete with the bad guy, right? So, like, right. If we actually had freedom, and we don't, what we have is a crony capitalist system. Mm-hmm. But if we actually had freedom, then there wouldn't be any governments standing in the way to prohibit those workers from starting up competition. So you don't like it when somebody has more than you?
I don't really care if somebody has more than me. Like, if I'm making $50,000 and then somebody's making $75,000, that's not really a problem for me. What's a problem is that Jeff Bezos, if he were to sell off all of his assets,
right?
The owner of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, he would be able to fund the Department of Education for 20 years.
But why would he want to do that?
I know. I can think of a lot better things for him to fund.
Well, that was just an example. Like, to take the five richest individuals in the United States and sell off all their assets.
Why don't we sell off the government's assets? How about that? I mean,
right.
They got a whole
and
lot of money.
And now we're talking numbers that dwarf, I mean, absolutely dwarf the amount of money of the 10 richest.
Why would you want to sell off the rich people's assets? They provide jobs and opportunities to thousands of people. You would basically destroy all those people's careers.
That was just an example.
But let's go back into the question of taking over the factory, because it did sound like there were certain circumstances under which you would support that. But just a few moments ago, you also agreed that you shouldn't use the use of aggressive force to achieve your goals. So do you consider the armed takeover of a factory not to be the use of aggressive force?
No, that would be the use of aggressive force.
The thing is, you can bring up all of the failures of socialism, and had we had more time with him, and we could have kept him on, but I wanted to bring other voices on, had we kept him on and brought up, because right at the end of the call, you brought up all these failed, examples, and Venezuela, of course, is the current example of socialist failure, but then they'll just simply say, well, they did it wrong.
Exactly.
Because we need to do it my way.
Yeah. Right, you know what? Why don't you live in America? Why don't you be an American and give it a shot? You know what I mean? Let's talk about DACA and these Democrats, because obviously I'm a conservative Republican.
Okay, well, what is DACA? Can we describe what that is?
What it is it's dreamers. They call them dreamers, but they're illegal aliens that were brought here years ago, and they're actually adults, okay? And what they are is they're people that the Democrats want because they automatically think they're going to vote Democrat.
But that's so not necessarily true.
No, it's not.
Well, I know, but that's what they think.
Right.
But they want them banned. So, I mean, if they just made like a law that said anybody that came in illegally we're going to keep, but you can't vote for like 15 years, you think they would be pounding down the doors to shut the government down over these people?
So is that what you'd like to see happen, is where they're allowed to stay but just not allowed to vote?
No, I would like to see them all rounded up and sent back.
That is insane.
Country.
Larry, you were talking about why socialism doesn't work, and I wanted to have a chance, or you to have a chance, to kind of expound on why that is.
Because nobody cares. When the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock, they had a socialist pact. For the first year, half of them literally starved to death. They'd rather starve to death than work and give everything they owe to everybody else. Even though in the woods it was teeming with game, nobody bothered to go out and get it. There were deer and whatever out in the woods, bear, everything.
Turkey.
but nobody wants to go get it. After they abolish the socialist system, they put in a capitalist system. Everybody gets a plot, you work your plot, and they prospered from there, and then it took off.
They had a surplus, so, as a matter of fact, after they put in a system in which people could own property. I mean, I personally, I don't like this sort of dichotomy between socialism and capitalism. I mean, all these isms. I think that capitalism has become a dirty word, and it's frequently associated with the crony capitalism that we talked about earlier. How about just a system of private property? You know, a system of ownership, a system of incentives, because when you have this socialist or communist or whatever system of from each according to his ability to each according to his need, well, then surprise, surprise, everybody gets real needy.
I was calling about DACA. There's sort of a misunderstanding about this program. This is 3.2 million people we're talking about here. Most of these people have been here for, their entire lives, just barely missing the cutoff, have been born here in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way we're going to round up 3.2 million people in boxcars and send them over the border to God knows
That's
where.
Insane anyway, even if they tried it.
Right. What's really telling about the fact is that this program nationwide has a 72% approval rating. We're talking about like Medicaid and Medicare levels of approval.
Huh, interesting. So wait, what you're saying is Americans are actually compassionate and they want to help people who want to come here and live here?
Except with a couple of notable exceptions. I'm not trying to say anything. The base of Trump support is dead opposed to this program. A lot of them are very entitled people who grow up believing that because they were born in a certain place, they're entitled to stay, work in a factory and make $30 an hour. And that's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're blaming U.S. citizens for their problems.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Just because they're a convenient punching bag. This program is not controversial. What they're really after in the program is cutting spending to non-bottle programs like food stamps, WIC, et cetera. But they're using this as cover. This really shows like a failure of leadership pretty much at every level. I don't even think there's anybody really you can blame in specific for this. But if you want to illustrate what a disaster of legislative process in this country is, this is an excellent example.
Agreed.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.